You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standick here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Hope you guys are rocking and rolling and whatnot. Day two of training camp in the books. I was in Richmond at the Siegel Center on the campus of VCU for all the action. And by all the action, I basically just mainly had a chance to talk to people. Wizards keeping it close to the vest. We're not really able to see anything of real practice, just them shooting afterwards. It is what it is, but got a chance to talk to them, got a chance to get some insight, and had a special guest. I think I mentioned it on yesterday's podcast, or at least I did on Twitter, that my plan was going to be, who knows what I did, but my plan was going to be to play an awesome interview I did with the great Steve Buckhantz with regards to the news that came out today that Carol Lawson is officially going to be the Wizards' primary analyst on TV broadcasts. I talked with Steve Buckhantz on Monday about this and was going to play that for you after the announcement came out. Certainly not a sort of an open secret that we kind of all knew that Carol Lawson was happening, and that became official today. However, while at Richmond today, there was a surprise guest in the building, and that would be none other than Brian Windhorst from ESPN, who for me is easily one of my favorite NBA analysts. I love the way he goes at it. I think I said as much during the podcast. The way he's candid and fair. And so I decided I'm going to play that for you guys today instead. We talked for about 20 minutes on all sort of the topics you would imagine. Wizards, how they fare in the East. He obviously knows LeBron James, Kyrie Irving rather well. So we got into all that. So I will play that as well. And I'll get to the Buckhantz one later in this week, along with some other player interviews that I was able to get while in Richmond. In addition to that, I will play a little bit of sound for you from John Wall as part of my, today we'll go with a three-point play, the three things that I found to be the most interesting from day two of training camp. We'll get to all that in just a second. I'm going to keep mentioning it here. If you already subscribe to the podcast, fantastic. Could not appreciate you more, truly. Do me a favor, tell your peeps, if you guys know Wizards fans, you know what, the only way we're going to be able to keep going here on this is the more people know about it, the bigger we can get this thing going, and then hopefully that makes it worth it for all involved. And look, obviously the season's starting. You guys know, those of you who were part of this podcast last year know, I'm in it to win it. I'm not doing this podcast just for the hell of it, just for, you know, just randomly a blue moon daily. We're going for it. So tell your friends, subscribe to the Locked On Wizards podcast. They do it on iTunes, wherever they can do it, go for it. iTunes seems to be the most popular one. Hit that subscribe button. Also, if you got a sec to put up a review, positive would be cool. More reviews helps people find the podcast as well. Had a brand new one up there from Rotisserie. Had some good things to say. I say the author's name is Rotisserie. I don't know what the person's actual name is. I'm assuming his or her parents did not come up with that. In any event, thank you for the kind words. Greatly appreciate it. Also, you want to talk to me on Twitter? You can do that at Ben Standick. You want to hit me up on email, bstandick1@gmail.com. And I will also just mention while we're here, you know, if you're interested in the overall NBA product, there is lots of podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can, literally, every team in the NBA got one of these. The Locked On Celtics guys, we've talked about them plenty. They're a very good one, of course, and obviously Wizards Celtics will be a big deal. So what the hell, I'll say it again, go check out the Locked On Celtics podcast for more on what's going on up in Boston. Now, I'll get to Brian Windhorst in just a second, but here are the three things, my three-point play, the three things that I found most interesting with regard to the Wizards on day two of training camp. First off, let me say this. So at one point, I asked Scott Brooks a question about Tim Frazier and you know, what he's seeing already. It's only day two, but what he's seeing already with Tim Frazier, how he can help this team, because obviously last year the backup point guard situation was, you know, no bueno. And I also talked to Tim Frazier. I will play that one for you, as I said, later in the week. So, in the answer, Scott Brooks said all the good things you would imagine about Tim Frazier. Hard worker, you know, guy's really worked his way up through the system to get to where he's at. He can run the team and all that good stuff. But he also said that they'll still got to figure out how to dole out the minutes. He mentioned Tim Frazier. He mentioned Tomas Satoransky. And he also mentioned Donald Sloan, who is on the training camp roster. Donald Sloan and wing guard Carrick Felix Carrick Felix. Yeah. Are on the team. Or I should say they're on the training camp roster. But we're all kind of looking past them. Odds are that we could probably continue to do that. But when just based on the reality is that there's 15 players with at least a partial guaranteed contract. Now that includes Sheldon Mack and Daniel Oshefu, who only have partial guarantees, while everybody else, including Chris McCullough, are full. The interesting part about this with regard to Donald Sloan is, and sort of checking in with some folks, my sense is that for the Wizards, the odds may still be in favor that they keep Mack and Oshefu, but I do think it's in play with regards to the 15th man in two different ways. One, I think it's possible that Donald Sloan makes the team. I would say that would be unlikely just based on having John Wall, having Tim Frazier, and having Satoransky, you've got some point guard options. But the other option, and maybe one that we all need to think about a little bit more, is that the Wizards potentially open the season with only 14 players and don't have a 15th player. Remember, they do have the two-way contract players, and Mike Young and Devin Robinson, who Robinson's out of practice. I think it's a decent, if I say there's a decent chance, I don't mean to say that the odds are better than 50-50. I guess I just mean, considering that I think most of us have been just kind of looking past that for the most part, I think there's at least a consideration, from what I'm told, that the Wizards are at least pondering the idea of only going with 14 players to start. So I think we have to keep our mind open here. If you made me put odds on it, I guess I would say that Mack / Oshefu make the team. But I think we also have to leave open the possibility that over this next, you know, the rest of this week of training camp, plus a slate of preseason games, there is a chance that the Wizards could, in fact, go with either Donald Sloan, or maybe the more likely of these two random scenarios, go with only 14 players. Something to keep an eye on. If I hear more, I will definitely mention to you that here or somewhere I do some writing and then probably mention it here anyway. So that's something to keep in mind for sure. Point number two here on the Locked On Wizards podcast, three things that stood out to me on day two. Everyone is practicing or has practiced so far, according to Scott Brooks, other than, of course, Markieff Morris, who's coming off the surgery, and Devin Robinson, one of the two G League players who's dealing with a foot injury. Scott Brooks said everybody else is practicing. That means Mike Scott and Jody Meeks, two guys who, you know, injuries were a factor for them last year, particularly Meeks the last couple of years. That's a good sign. We haven't no indication so far that there's any issue with either of those guys. Obviously, for Meeks, that's particularly noteworthy. So I think that is, I mean, it's no news, but considering the concern for those players, I think it is indeed some news. Of course, we all remember Jan Mahimi, you know, last year, you know, he's missing, you know, tons of time with an early injury. Now, obviously, the Wizards are dealing with Markieff Morris, so I'm not pretending that they don't have any injuries, but we kind of have a sense, at least now, of where he's at back in 6 to 8 weeks. So now I guess it's 6 to 7 weeks, or almost 6 to 7 weeks. But anyway, to me, I just think that's important to note with considering the importance of what Jody Meeks and Mike Scott are going to bring to this team, or that they hope to bring to this team. It's key that they're healthy. Speaking of those two, I should mention, if you have not missed it, I did one-on-ones
with them. Mike Scott as part of my media day recap, and Jody Meeks as part of day one of training camp recap. So that is that. Point number three, John Wall. Two things on John Wall. First off, you know, he spent a good chunk of his offseason, as best I can tell, excuse me, working out, getting in shape. I say that because he was posting a lot of social media videos, pictures, what have you, of him doing various workouts. And he talked about the fact that the goal was to get in better conditioning, better shape, so he'd have more energy late in games. He admitted at Media Day that, you know, he said this before as well, but that, you know, he was tired at some point late in games. And now he's hoping that the work he's put in will have him enough energy so that's not an issue. Another sort of point I guess I'm going to make here, this is a little bit weird, but for those of you, a lot of you guys who are really into the Wizards or really into John Wall probably know that he's got a friend slash, I guess, bodyguard. This guy named Flav. You've seen him, I'm sure you've seen him at game on TV at least. Big guy, he was out there when John Wall and Jay Crowder were getting into it in what, 2016 or 2015 or whatever, with the poking, when Crowder poked him in the nose. Flav was one of the guys, was a guy like right there, sort of in between them. Well, on Instagram recently, I noticed that, and he and John Wall seemingly go everywhere together at all times. And I noticed that he did recently for himself a before and after picture showing himself how he had lost significant weight. He's a big guy, big frame, but he showed before and after that he lost some weight. And that to me was a good sign for John Wall, because if his pal had done that, then John Wall, they seemingly are doing everything together, but that was probably a good sign for Wall. And today I really took a look at Wall. He was warming up a little bit right in front of me at one point. I put up a quick video of him just doing a couple things on my Twitter account at Ben Standig. And then at one point I also saw Wall, it was after practice, he was walking around without his shirt on. He definitely looks to be in pretty good shape. I mean, his arms look, a little more definition there. I think his chest, looked a little bit bigger as well. So, a good sign there from John Wall's physique. I mean, look, again, admitted fat guy, I'm not remotely body shaming John Wall by any stretch of form, but obviously at that level, you're going up against the best athletes in the world, and there certainly were times last year where it seemed like he ran out of gas late in games. You want to call that he was forced to do so much on both ends of the court for this team? Okay, that's fine. But I also think, you know, and part was last year he was coming off the knee injury right at the start, never had probably as much of a chance to build up the cardio and what have you going into the year. He did now. Seems like it is working. So that is a good sign. But speaking of John Wall, let me play a little bit for you of what he said today. He spoke for a little bit at practice. Here's about like a 2-minute sampling of John Wall talking about training camp as well his relationship with Bradley Beal.
John, day two here for training camp. What's it like just to kind of get back, the team reunited, second year with your coach?
It's great. I mean, we all kind of bringing like 2 of our guys back from last year, kind of just having fun, understanding what we really want from each other, what our team expectations are. We want to play defense first, get out in transition, space the floor, knock down shots, and be a team that can test shots. If we do that, we'd be fine. We showed that when we played well last year, and it's kind of easy breeze for us right now.
Can you feel, does it feel any different day two this year compared to last year with new coach, a lot of new players this year, more continuity? Does it feel any different?
Yeah, yesterday felt a lot different. I mean, we just got back to doing just teaching the basics all over again. Last year, we all had to understand the basics, understand what coach wanted. You've seen a lot of guys. We had boxes on the court so we can run in certain spots. We even had them on the court so guys can figure out where they want to be. And then we already know where we want to be. We know where guys like their shots at. And I'm just trying to add the new guys into the system and try to get them to their sweet spots and find out where they want the ball.
Coach was saying that you guys were teasing a little bit of dinner last year compared to dinner this year with everyone. How much does it have knowing now with him second year what to really expect from him?
It's easy. I mean, he knows what to expect from us. You know what he has to do to push certain guys' buttons to get out what he want to get out of each other on the court or even when we're just having fun. So it makes everything a lot more calm and cool.
Do you remember the first time you met Brad?
Me?
Yeah, you.
It was a long time ago, man. AAU tournament, so yeah, it was cool.
When you guys drafted him and he first came here. What were your first conversations like? And what would you really
Well, before we even drafted him, I told him that it's no brainer who we should draft at number three. Then it was kind of like in between a little bit at times, but I was like, this should be a no brainer. That's a great guy to play with, just a great person to be around, seeing how good he was as a two guard, and that's what we needed at the time. So I think he could help our team out a lot. And we got to be around each other. The talk was kind of different because I was dealing with a knee problem, so I wasn't able to play. So my mind was somewhere else, but I was trying to be excited for him to bring him onto this team and try to tell him that it's going to be rough early on. It's a lot of pressure on you, even more pressure now that I'm not going to be there. So you have to be able to stand with the lows yourself. But it was cool. We got to hang out, and it was fine.
What are some of the things?
All right, that's just a small sample for John Wall. I just realized I hadn't played any of him from this week, and he talked today, so there's just some quickie thoughts from there. I mean, I like what he says. It was a no-brainer for him that the Wizards should have taken Beal in the draft. That's one of the things about this relationship. Beyond just as straight basketball, they are a perfect on-the-court combination because of the one guy's the pass-first guard who's as fast as anybody can get all the way to the rim, and the other guy's a classic perimeter shooter who doesn't demand the ball to be successful. So it's just a perfect combination. Obviously, last year in particular, it's been great. By the way, you should read our pal Todd Divas wrote about the two of them on the Washington Times. Go check that out. He's got a really interesting stat. I think basically, I don't want to jump on it, but you can go read for more details. But basically, that Wall and Beal are one of only two pairs the last 5 years to be 1-2 in scoring on their team. And they can make it 6 in a row. The other combination can't do that. Go read Todd's article for the full details on that. Here now, let's get to the bigger interview here of the day. Mr. Brian Windhorst, ESPN. Like I said, really legitimately one of my favorite NBA guys. He was there. He was gracious enough to talk. All kinds of stuff. I think we start off a little bit about the Eastern Conference overall, how sort of bad the bottom is and how the Wizards need to take advantage of that. Brian gives his take on where he thinks the Wizards can go. And of course, we had to talk about Kyrie and LeBron. If you're going to have a guy who knows the Cleveland Cavaliers as well as he does, you'd be stupid not to. And at least today, I didn't think I was stupid. So here we go. Brian Windhorst, ESPN.com's NBA analyst. All right, we're here for Wizards Day 2 training camp. Surprise visitor at training camp, Mr. Brian Windhorst, ESPN. I'm sure he'll be like, don't say this, but I legitimately love your stuff, man. whenever you're on one of the podcasts, I always make sure I got to listen to that one. I love the way you go about it with your honesty and your candor. I'll ask you about for my honest take on this team and that Cleveland team you pay attention to. But let me start at the bottom of the East for a quick second.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, everybody talks about the imbalance between the two conferences for some time. But to the degree that we're looking at this East now, like I just looked at it the other day, not in terms of the Wizards making the playoffs, but just who were sort of the contenders, it feels like there's like maybe 9 contenders in the East. I mean, maybe 10, depending on what you want to look at a couple teams. Is this, from top to bottom, the worst the East has been since we've been having this sort of disparity conversation?
Well, not only just the teams, but the overall talent in the East. I mean, we had a significant transfer of talent from East to West. And also, we have some fresh new tankers in the East. The Hawks, Mike Budenholzer won't let them, win 10 games, but they are clearly tanking with their roster moves. The Bulls are clearly tanking. The Pacers don't tank, but they've taken a step back. I mean, those three teams right there that I think will be bad teams this year, that weren't really bad teams last year. And who's stepping up? I mean, the Heat probably should have been a playoff team last year. They'll make it this year. But, who demonstratively got better when those three teams got worse?
I mean, I guess Philly, assuming that, Joel Embiid is okay.
I guess that's a fair answer. I think if you're at the top of the East, like the Wizards are, you should feast. You should feast on the Eastern Conference. You should rack up wins. Wizards should be, health matters so much, but, just eyeballing them, I mean, they should win 55 games this year. Just because their talent level, I mean, they've got 3 max players, they've got a couple of all-stars. They're going to be, all those nights when they're playing Eastern Conference teams, especially at home, where they're good, they should just run Eastern Conference teams out of Capital One Arena.
Is it Arena or Center? Arena.
They should run teams out of Capital One Arena all year long from Eastern Conference, and that's just reality.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be weird. I mean, it's one thing to be bad, but at least like what Philly has been bad last few years, they've had at least some guy that you were sort of interested, some rookie, and typically these bad teams have somebody. But like Atlanta, I don't even know where the interest level is. Indiana's not going to be I don't know where they're going to be. I mean, Detroit's just going to basically maybe luck into the playoffs. I don't think they actually got better. They just may luck in based on the fact that there's not enough teams. So definitely going to be a weird year in the East. I'm curious though what you just said. You said you look at the Wizards and you see a team that could win 55 games in part because of the East. We talk so much about their continuity. The starting lineup was essentially the same starting lineup the previous year.
Right.
It's just that I think people weren't sure what to make of Otto. Bradley Beal had the injuries. John Wall was coming off two knee surgeries. What do you see as the biggest difference? I mean, obviously they won last year, so that changes it. But like, what for you? What was the biggest change from a year ago where everybody's like, I don't know, to now where you think they
were? Well, continuity is, you know, every team has something to talk about, you know. So there's 30 different stories. And if a team hasn't had changes, they say, oh, we've got continuity on our side. You know, if they're not good players, I mean, you know, there's continuity in some places where they're bad, you know, and it's not going to make a difference because they're bad. I don't think the continuity is the Wizards' strength. I mean, that is their strength right now. That'll be their strength theoretically in November and December, although they've lost Markieff Morris for a while. That's just something to talk about the first week of training camp, just like everybody talks about, oh, so-and-so lost weight, so-and-so gained weight. Not only is there a race of weight loss, but it's like, oh, I got up at 6 a.m. to work out this summer, or I stayed up till 3 a.m. I was in the gym, you know. And these are just training camp stories. I care more about talent. And you look at the Wizards, and I see 5 or 6 really talented players. And, the cost of backups dramatically went down over the summer. The Wizards, 2 years ago, or I guess a year ago, whatever it was, summer of 2016, paid a lot of money for backup players.
Right.
And it didn't go so well.
No.
This year, they have new backups that they didn't pay a lot of money for. And they took advantage of the lowered market. So hopefully those guys work out, because the issue when I see the Wizards is I see super-duper top-end talent, and then you're relying on guys to deliver. You know, that's kind of what you saw that manifest itself in the playoffs last year, you know, like – it got to the point where it was hard to play Kelly Oubre because nobody trusted him to make a shot,
right.
You know, and you end up only trusting 4 guys. And so the goal for this team year over year is to be able to get to the playoffs and say, okay, there's 7 guys we can trust. That's what you really need. You know, in the playoffs, you know, okay, the Warriors aren't like this, but they're a little bit of an outlier. In the playoffs, generally, you play 8 guys and you trust 7. If you have 7 guys you can trust, 7 healthy guys you can trust, you'll be okay. And so to me, that's what the Wizards needed to get to. They needed to get to 7 guys, and that should be their goal as they go through this season, because they didn't have that last year. And that is what, you know, there was a lot of things that happened in that Celtics series. Kelly Olynyk has the game of his life in Game 7. If he has another game like that, God bless him. I would be surprised if he did. But that's what this season should be about, is – okay, we know that Bradley Beal and John Wall are good. We know John Wall is one of the best players in the league. We knew that already. Okay, he's already taking it to another level. Should Bradley Beal be an all-star? This year, with the lack of talent in the East, yeah, we should see that get there. But we know who Bradley Beal is. He's not going to change his game. We know who John Wall is. The question to me is, when you get down to it, do you trust Kelly Oubre? Do you trust Tim Frazier, who I think was a really good pickup for what they paid him? Can you trust Jody Meeks? Will Jody Meeks stay healthy? Can you play Mike Scott in a playoff game? These are the things that are going to determine whether the Wizards are a better team.
So you mentioned that 7 guys, and I'm with you. I don't, whenever people talk about the roster, I always look at it just give me that. Let me see what the top 8 looks like, because right, if you're thinking playoffs, and that's really all that matters, bigger picture. So if we say the Wizards starting 5 when Markieff Morris is there, that's 5. I guess I'd say Tim Frazier, and I hope Mahimi, if he stays healthy. Is that the seven you would see?
Yeah, I mean, it's way too early to know. You know, it's way too early to know what the style is going to be. You know, Jan's talking a good game. I've seen it. I saw the quotes. You know, it's a classic training camp conversation. Look, I saw how Jan played with the Pacers. If he brings that, you'd love to have that. You know, we'll see. But these are good things. Like, that's a good problem to have. If, you know, Ernie went into the summer trying to lock down Porter and John Wall, and he did for huge money, but he did. And now you look at this team, and you can say, okay, the core is under contract, and even the key role players under contract. You know, Gortat and Markieff Morris are under contract, and, you know, so his real job was to add those supporting pieces, because that's where they fell down. Boston was just deeper than them last year. And that may not be true anymore, and that's what you want to see. And they like the way they match up with Cleveland. Let's see how they look against the new Cleveland. And, you know, we'll see. What I know is this. The Wizards can go into this season and legitimately look themselves in the mirror and say they have a chance to get to the finals. They're not going to be the favorite.
The NBA Finals, you're saying?
Yeah, the NBA Finals. Well, the Eastern Conference. They should have been in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Had they been healthy and handled their business a little bit better, and if Isaiah, you know, only scores 40 instead of 53 or whatever he did in that game, maybe they get to the – I know that would be a huge step to get to the Conference Finals. But they can look at themselves in the mirror and say they have a chance to win the East. And that's not nothing. There's meaning. There's meaning in that. And now it's a matter of working to get to that point.
Yeah, it's interesting. Whenever you ask them about their goals, and it happened again the other day with John Wall, they never say NBA Finals. They always say Eastern Conference Finals. And I think that's for the obvious reason. I would think LeBron is sitting there, and they look at it as an impenetrable barrier that nobody's been able to crack, obviously, for some time. So it's interesting to hear professional athletes not say – I cover the NFL also, the Redskins. Always, somebody will always say, oh, the Super Bowl's a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
They never do that here. They always – I shouldn't say never, but they pretty much always go Eastern Conference Finals. So it's interesting to hear. I mean, I think you're right at just as an obvious level, this top three or four teams.
Well, I mean, you can build a case. I'm not saying this is how I feel, but you can build a case that the Wizards are the second-best team in the East. I know that the computers – all love the Celtics. You know, I my colleagues at ESPN who run the projection models, they all think the Celtics, they love the Celtics. I look at the Celtics and I see a team that's not as deep as last year. And I see a team that, you know, is relying on some unproven, like, you know, I don't know what Jason Tatum is going to be. Maybe Jason Tatum will be the rookie of the year. I don't know. I'm not afraid to say that I don't know. I didn't watch him in college that much. Yes, I watched him in summer league, but I mean, hell, I mean, there's a bunch of guys in summer league who have great summer leagues and don't translate it. Maybe he will. Maybe he will be rookie of the year. Maybe the Celtics will be the number one seed again, and the Wizards will have to go deal with them as a 1-4. But I mean, I look at Washington, and you know, this is the way when I evaluate teams, this is the way I always do it. If you put both teams into one bin, and you started drafting players out, you know, who would your first pick be between Boston and Washington? I know who I'm taking first, and he plays for the Wizards. Okay, all right, well, now we get to the second pick. Okay, you know, maybe Kyrie Irving. Now we're at the third pick. You know, maybe you take Gordon Hayward. I might take Bradley Beal. You know, now we're, you know, what I'm saying is there's not much difference there in my mind.
Right.
And you know, I feel like, and if you're talking that you're neck and neck with the Celtics, you're not that far from the Cavs. So, realistically, do I pick them as a favorite? No. But can they look at themselves in the mirror and say, under certain circumstances, can we get there? Yes, they could get there.
You mentioned the Celtics, and obviously you know Kyrie as well as anybody. Great player. He may be the best finisher at the rim, especially for a guard. I mean, it's crazy what he can do, and he played up big in the finals. I give a lot of credit to that. If you show the chutzpah to make those shots, props. To me, though, he's not somebody that I would necessarily think to build my team around as sort of the one guy or even the 1A guy. Boston is apparently going down that route. They finally made the move. Everybody's like, hey, Danny Ainge, when are you making that move? They finally did it. Based on your experience, I know you've talked about this ad nauseum, so I always hesitate to ask, but do you think the Celtics went in on the right guy? If they're going to make that big move, did they go in on the right guy to potentially, you know, get to the finals?
Well, Kyrie...
Or to build a winner, I should say, maybe not even just this year.
I think Kyrie is absolutely positioned his game perfectly to be great in the playoffs, because what you need in a playoff setting, which is a guy who's not afraid, because he is not afraid, a guy who can create his own shot under pressure, he can do that. He's done it at the highest level. And, you know, a guy who can take over a game by himself. I mean, he has on his resume several giant 40-point playoff games. That is not nothing, okay? So I see a guy there that can be a difference maker. What I haven't seen is a guy in Kyrie carry a team. I've seen him carry games. I've not seen him carry a team. And he believes he can. So we'll see if he can. The Celtics made two interesting choices that they didn't have to make. They elected to move out of the number one pick to get Tatum instead of Fultz. Now, Danny Ainge has said that he would have taken Tatum number one, and that he's essentially gamed the system because he got a free draft pick, potentially high draft pick from the Sixers to take the guy that he was always going to take. So, now Danny Ainge just put his neck on the line there a little bit, because if Markelle Fultz goes out there and becomes like a mega star, and Jason Tatum, you know, even if he's a quality player, that's putting your neck on the line. The other thing that he did was he cashed in his chips, not for Jimmy Butler, who was a two-way player at the wing position, which is a more desirable position, not for Paul George, again, a two-way player at the wing position. Now, granted, George only had 1 year in his contract. That's fair, but Jimmy Butler had two. He goes for Kyrie at point guard, where he already had a point guard who arguably is a comparable player. Kyrie may not think that way. Maybe the Celtics don't think that way. So he's put his neck on the line, in my mind, because he's made two choices that can directly and unequivocally be evaluated in the short-term future. Because if Jimmy Butler goes to Minnesota and, like, has a great year and leads Minnesota to the playoffs, you know, that's going to be something, because they could have gotten Jimmy Butler. So Danny Ainge has the capital to do it. He's got a ring as the GM. He's got full and unfettered control of that team. No one's questioning his power. So he did it. And he may end up, at the end of the day, be able to say, I game the system. And when LeBron moves on from Cleveland or fades and the Cavs fade and if the Celtics are there ready to make their run for the next 5 years, then he can stand up on the pedestal. But he did, in my mind, take a couple of risks. And he may have spun his wheels a little bit by swapping out his whole team. This could have been maybe a year where the Celtics, had they stayed more together, may have, in my mind, may have been better, because they rebuilt through free agency and let Avery Bradley go and let Zeller go and let Olenek go and traded Isaiah. Their depth isn't quite where it was. I think you will see the Celtics team be better next year than they are this year when they get another round of free agency and they get another draft and all that stuff. He specifically took a step back and basically let LeBron continue to hold on firmly to the East. So these are decisions that will play out over time.
Yeah, the fact that they went head-to-head was, to me, probably the more fascinating. I mean, they made the deal straight up with each other when the idea that Cleveland was going to have to trade Kyrie, and the people started saying, oh, Boston has a good package. No way. Why would you trade it vice versa? Why would you trade with the team directly competing? But they did, and I think it's probably like what you said, Boston maybe thinking beyond this season, and Cleveland's like, well, it was the best situation we could get.
Cleveland, after 2010, Cleveland has to hedge on LeBron.
Right.
So this trade allowed them to hedge. You know, it allowed them to get, if Isaiah is healthy, two players that in theory can help them be very good with Jay Crowder, and it gives them that draft pick. LeBron's hedging. You know, LeBron isn't committing, so he's hedging. So the Cavs are hedging against LeBron's hedge. And so that's why they did that trade. You know, and I'll tell you, like, LeBron sounds like he's pretty happy with it. He's pretty happy with the trade. Now, I look at it and say there's not many players in the NBA, not many perimeter players, who are worse defenders than Kyrie Irving. But the Cavs got their hands on one. I'll give them credit. That was hard to do, but they did. And I look at them against the Warriors and say they did not make up much ground there because, yes, they got Jay Crowder, but now they've lost their second offensive option, and Isaiah is going to be hard to play in the clutch against them because they'll just attack him like the Wizards attacked him in the playoffs last year. But, you know, it was a good trade. And the fact that the Cavs were willing to trade Kyrie to their rival, I think, was a statement where they still think their team is. Like, they may prove to be wrong on this. I'm not even saying I agree with it. I'm just going to say how they view it. LeBron doesn't, you know, he's like, okay, Kyrie's on our team. I'll just go beat him. You know, he doesn't view the Celtics as more of a challenge than they were a year ago. Maybe right. That'll be incorrect, but I'm just telling you that's how he looks at it.
I'm sitting here talking to you. Immediately, I think LeBron. You mentioned LeBron. Do you get tired of talking about LeBron? Like, do you wish on some level you could not?
Well, I don't like that some people consider that to be the only thing I can talk about, you know, and they also kind of think that, you know, I'm only going to be pro-LeBron. Trust me, ask LeBron. I've been anti-LeBron on a lot of things over the years. I think one of my roles for a long time was to be a person who was not afraid to criticize him. Then it became fashionable to criticize LeBron, and everybody criticized him, and then at times I felt like I had to be the person to stand up for him. Right. So I feel like I've just tried to be fair. But the answer to the question is LeBron is a gift. It's a gift to basketball fans. It's a gift to the basketball media. Someday LeBron will not be in the league, and I have not been paid like LeBron, so I will have to continue working when LeBron is out of the league. And we will all suffer when that happens. So, especially since he is now on the back side of his career, I will never get tired of, you know, and he's still probably the best player in the league. It's not as clear-cut and defined as it was in the past, but he may win the MVP this year because, you know, the guys who finished 1-2 last year, you know, Westbrook now has George and Carmelo, and his production will come down. He's not going to average a triple-double. If he does, my God, he'll win it again. But, right. You know, he's probably not going to average a triple-double again, or at least he's not going to be the same type of dominant force. And, you know, James Harden has Chris Paul now, and his numbers are going to recede a little bit as he shares. And as, you know, Durant and Curry showed last year, they're both MVPs, but it's hard to win when you share the court with another superstar. And LeBron has the revenge factor. And I think the Cavs are going to be really good. Like, in a way, Kyrie's leaving may re-energize and reinvigorate them. And so you might see them actually be a, you know, you may see them play better because right. They're trying to prove something. So, like, I mean, it might end up being Kawhi. It might end up being Giannis. But LeBron could win the MVP at age 33. I mean, he's still an extremely relevant, powerful player. And in a league that's defined by personalities, by players like that, that's, you know, a good thing to have.
Best guess, at the level he's sort of at now, first team All-NBA player, how much longer do you think LeBron has?
Yeah, he's in terrific physical condition. While he battles certain things, he's battled back issues. You know, he just has to watch his knees. He's never had a serious injury. I mean, when you look at, like, Kobe had knee problems, you know? You know, LeBron has never had a surgery.
Can it be like put in, like, we need like a government order when LeBron, 100 years from now, whenever his days on this earth are over, somebody needs to study him. How is it that a guy playing these many minutes at this level, every athlete has an injury, he never does?
Well, it's a combination. First off, he has, I mean, and one of his teammates told me this one time, he has incredibly large joints.
Okay.
I know that sounds like very strange, but if you look at the size of his ankles, the size of his elbows, the size of his shoulders, the size of his knees, they're very large. I mean, this is not scientific. Just, they're strong.
Sure.
You know, a hinge that's three times the size as someone else's hinge is going to be a stronger hinge. So the joints, which often fail in athletes, he has a gift there. The other thing is that he is maniacal about his training. And, you know, there are great athletes that are not maniacal about training. And for whatever reason, since he's been young, I mean, he started getting worried about flexibility and preservation and things like when he was maybe in his like fifth or sixth year in the league. I mean, when he first came in the league, he didn't even tape his ankles for games, if you can believe that, or at least not every game.
Right. Wow.
If he had a little tweaked ankle, he would do it. I mean, so but then he went to the point where he was doing like major cool down routines, major post workout stretching routines, yoga when he was like, you know, 23. So he also is taking care of himself in that way, doing a lot of injury prevention stuff. So, you know, he's gifted, but he's also worked really hard.
Well, Ryan, I could keep talking to you, ask you questions all day. I know you got I'm sure you got a life to lead. So I don't hold you up. Definitely appreciate it. I tell everybody to follow you on Twitter, but they already do. But I'm blanking. What is it? Windhorse ESPN?
Yeah.
All right. So go follow him again. Brian, really appreciate it, man. Best
Thanks
of luck this offseason with all your travels.
Good to talk to you.
All right, there you go. Jam-packed episode. I could have talked to Windhorst for an hour, but I had to go. I got things to do, and so did he. So, ended there. I definitely will plan on getting Brian back on the podcast. I really hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I certainly did. Great insight, and hopefully we'll circle back on some of the things that he said leading into the season. Thanks to Brian Windhorst. Thanks to John Wall. And thanks to you guys for listening. Hopefully you guys are gearing up for the season. I know I am. We're getting close. First preseason game on Monday. And the fun continues. I'm going to end it there. iTunes, Twitter, email. You guys know how to find me. Do that. Until next time. See ya.
Rush into Old Navy today for this can't-miss one-day deal. 50% off all Old Navy active for the family. Get the workout wear you need at a huge 50% off one day only today. Hurry in or miss out at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/20, select styles only, excludes in-store clearance.